Come stop and take a trip down on my block, where you see hidden potential, young minds sharper than pencil, and ain't afraid to speak their mind if they got something against you. We standing with you, we tackle issues like civic pride. Hate will cease to exist, let's put our differences aside. From my side to your side, from Dutch Town to South Side, from Penrose to North Side, from Benton Park to Old North, to West End to West Side. We bless when we step out, we stand down, rise up, stand together, why?
This is Stitchcast Studio, produced by St. Louis Story Stitchers in St. Louis, Missouri.
In a week-long celebration of often unheard voices, St. Louis Story Stitchers will present Rise Up with new youth-led podcasts and a performance celebrating the voices and rising power of Black youth. Rise Up, who's ready? Listen to the voices of Black youth to learn and grow your own awareness of the root causes of violence. Carry the torch forward to support at-risk youth in your own community. On September 3rd at 7:30 p.m. Central Time, Story Stitches will release our 2020 Black History Month performance, recorded live at the Brown School of Social Work at Washington University in St. Louis. Visit storystitches.org to learn more. This is a Stitchcast Studio Special Edition, Rise Up, Episode 16. Gun violence is a public health epidemic. In this episode, youth leaders discuss the causes and changes needed to end high rates of gun violence and suicide in Missouri, with Jesse LaRose from the Missouri Foundation for Health.
Who that, but you already knew that? That be them Story Stitches, Story Stitches, Story Stitches, Story Stitches, Story Stitches.
Hey everybody, it's Emira here, Program Director of St. Louis Story Stitchers. I'm back again with another episode with some of our youth leaders and a very special guest here today from Missouri Foundation of Health, Ms. Jesse LaRose. How are you today?
I'm doing well. Thank you guys for having me.
Yeah, no problem, no problem. So real quick, you know, just to kind of start it off, could you kind of tell, you know, our listeners and some of our youth who may not know you that well, what you do, you know, what's your role in the organization that you work for? And I mean, even if you, you know, are out in the community, even outside of what you do at work, you know, kind of tell us a little bit about that too.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. So, like you said, I'm Jesse LaRose. I am with the Missouri Foundation for Health, and my title there is Senior Strategist of Initiatives. And I've been with the foundation since 2012, so I've been there about 8 years, and have been working on the foundation's gun violence work since it started. And we started exploring kind of what we might do in the space in 2016, and so have been on that team and leading that effort kind of since the beginning of when the foundation got into that. Kind of a little bit about me. Fittingly, gun violence is a public health issue, and public health has been my passion for quite a while. I came to St. Louis to go to grad school to get my degree in public health, actually, and so I have a background in that, and really have just learned a lot about the region and St. Louis from working on the gun violence efforts specifically, but and have also been helping with some of the Cure Violence, serving on the steering committee as well. And so we've really been engaged in the efforts regionally. And you know, as we'll touch on a little bit later too, is how gun violence also affects, you know, the whole state of Missouri, not just St. Louis as well.
Yeah, definitely. And this question, I believe, will be for everybody. So any of the youth can feel free to chime in too and give an answer, because I believe you all's answers are very important as well. But why do you all think there is so much aggression and violence in our communities or in communities similar to ours? Why do you all think we see a lot of the violence that partakes in our communities?
So, you know, I think from a public health perspective, there's a lot of things that are root causes for violence. And I mean, if you're kind of thinking about, you know, employment and education and a lot of the things that have been really just heightened also because of COVID. So things that have been heightened because of COVID, but have always been problems and root causes of violence, and this, you know, lack of opportunities, lack of education, employment, There's disparities on the way opportunities that people have, and also kind of what they've been exposed to in their community or neighborhoods can be traumatic and cause trauma. And some of the public health approach to violence is that it can be a contagion and spread like an epidemic. So being exposed to violence can heighten that and increase.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely, I agree. Anybody else got anything to that for that?
For me, I think that all of those factors tie into just most of the violence that happens in those types of neighborhoods, and also just the point of view for like youth and other adults in that area. I think that mostly for some of us, it's like a tunnel vision. You only see like one straight direction or one pathway of where you can go, or just where you're going to end up. So I think it's like the lack of like understanding that there is a way out and there are other resources that you can go to.
That's good, because I was actually going to follow up with the question of how do we change the culture of Miss LaRose. I don't know if you ever heard this, but some young people, some youth, feel like it's a, like their goal is just to at least make it to C18. And I want to know, how do we change that thought process? How do we change that culture?
Well, I think it's, making the path and opportunities to have things beyond 18, education or having positive mentors, strong women and men to be there and mentor and show there's another path, or there's things to live for in life, and here are the opportunities that you can be thinking about, and when there's job opportunities too. I think some of the focus in the city has been also on getting youth jobs, so getting them in engaged in education and employment, and so seeing kind of having that longer term plan and goals are important as well, and also getting engaged. The opportunities, things like Story Stitchers is doing, getting people engaged in things that they love and are passionate about, and having those strong adult mentors working closely, and artists with you all. So I think those kinds of things are definitely positive ways to do that.
Yeah, I totally agree, especially with the mentor part, because I don't feel like, as a young person, if you have a mentor that's, telling you what your future could possibly hold, that you could, kind of keep that mindset for a long period of time. I feel like at some point, something in your head, something in your mind just kind of clicks and says, well, I want to live till I'm old. I want to see my kids and grandkids and different things like that.
It's just the other thing I was going to add too is people don't always get kind of mental health services, or you might have had traumatic experiences as a child, and if you don't get help or have counseling or those kinds of issues, that can really be a challenge as you get older. If you have things that you haven't been able to get addressed and talk to someone, and kind of lack of mental health services. It's a huge issue.
Yeah, definitely. That's very interesting you brought that up, because one of the questions were, what would you do if you were a youth in an urban St. Louis neighborhood? Like, what are some of the resources that you would turn to? Especially if you've experienced a traumatic, situation, whether it was recently or years before, like what are some things that you would, who are some people that you would reach out to if you had knowledge that you have now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think from our perspective as a foundation, some of the work that we've been trying to do is increasing access in schools to, you know, health services, to mental health services. And so, you know, I don't know if when I was a youth that I would be actively going for those things, but I think trying to make that access easier and having those services embedded in the school so that it makes it easier for people to access that, to have, and also to have those kinds of connections to things like, you know, different education pathways and employment pathways, and having that support to connect you to resources and knowing where to go. And so sometimes that can start in the school. Sometimes that might start with, you know, a trusted community member or organization, or maybe someone from your church. But having those kind of trusted individuals that you know in your community, help, you know, that can potentially help connect you and or you know, work with you to kind of address those needs.
Yeah, definitely. And I want to hear from the youth too, definitely on this question, like, what are things that could keep youth and young adults out of the streets or away from trouble? Or what are some things that have kept you all out of trouble, you know, thus far?
I would say having great mentors. That's the thing that's helped me, having good mentors and being involved in a lot of different after school activities and things like that.
Yeah, definitely. I can relate to that. T, I think you had something you wanted to say.
Yeah. I had an idea last week when we were talking, and I was saying, like, having after school like community center for like a lot of the people who don't really do things or don't really have after school programs that they want to join. So like if it's a whole bunch of clubs at school but it's not for you and everything like that, like it can be just that a big, real big community center for anybody. It can have like game rooms, the basketball courts and everything like that, just for you to be able to have somewhere to go after school if you don't want to go, if it's like something that you got going on at home or something like that, just family problems and you just want to get away from that and just clear your head because you don't want to bring it to school. And then you don't want to leave from school and then have that, like, being upset going home and everything like that. So you got somewhere that you know you feel comfortable going with, you're there with your friends, everything like that. So I just feel like a real big community center with just anything that's entertaining for the children would be a good thing.
I have a question for you all, kind of related to this. So I think there's, you know, connections to the school for those 18 and younger who are still engaged in school. But, you know, what about those that are 19 or 20? Kind of, where would you go at that age and who would you connect with?
Well, with that being said, I feel like, well, to me, when I was saying about the community center, that could be for anything. It can just be for you to be there, to have, like, if you wanted to just volunteer to do something instead of you being outside or being in the house and, you know, being bored and everything, or you so-called say it's boring in the house, so you don't have nothing to do. The community center will have, like, you can, like I say, you volunteer, you can, mm-hmm. just go up there for yourself, because everybody who don't love to play basketball, I mean, come on. Yeah. Don't like games. Like, it's not like it's gonna just be just childish or kid things. That no, anybody come, as long as it's preventing you from being outside, going down the wrong path, then that's basically where it should be at, right there.
Yeah, or maybe even like, because you asked, you know, for like the 19 and older. Really, I think a lot of times, from my experience and from friends that I have, and just kind of hearing, you know, how they're kind of getting through life after high school, is, you know, a lot of youth most of the time really don't know exactly what they want to do. Mm-hmm. But some are, you know, fortunate enough to be able to go to college, but some people really don't have the motivation or the means, you know, to do that or to pursue it. So I think those are the people we really are looking at, you know, those who are just, you know, Like, they want to do something, they want to be something, but they don't know what that is. So maybe having something that, you know, where they don't feel like they're being judged or forced to do something, but some type of program that could, you know, help them to explore their options, mm-hmm. you know, especially like, and a lot of times, you know, we see these things where they have like a trade class or something, but they're super expensive, you know, mm-hmm. like, so something that's more affordable, you know, something like that.
Skill for it to be affordable and accessible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Because then I think that's how you get those youth or those young adults who, you know, turn to the wrong things to try to make money, you know, and either A, get caught into a lifestyle that they're not able to maintain, and, you know, they kind of burn out, or B, you know, we lose them completely. So yeah, I think that would be a great thing to have, definitely. Something that helps young adults and youth transitioning out of high school into life, helping them to see what options they have. because a lot of people don't want to go work at a McDonald's, you know? And, you know, I don't feel like that should have to be the next thing, you know? Especially if it doesn't even help you to pay the bills every month. So yeah, just something like that, or even like, you know, helping our youth that are getting to that age before they get there to have already presented them with these alternative options, and possibilities, because I think sometimes for youth too, when, you know, it's like, it's an expectation for you to go to college sometimes, especially when you're at school. And so sometimes that expectation at school isn't lining up at home, because your parents aren't enforcing that on, they're not forcing that on you at all, you know? So kind of just having that balance and having somewhere that you don't feel judged, like if you decide not to go to college, like, you know, like, because some people feel like,
you know what those options are and how to do those if you want that, that's what you, the path you want to take.
Yeah, like it's not, you're not a failure if you don't go to college, like, you know. So like, and I think that's what some you feel like, you know, because they don't know what else to do. So yeah, definitely.
Life skills. I don't think anybody gets, any youth get great life skills training when they are in school and to,
yeah,
I start to, you know, pay bills and just be things that you do as an adult. I mean, I won't say how old I am, but I'm still learning those things, and I've been out of school for a while. Like,
yeah,
it's hard to navigate all those things.
Yeah,
and we feel very overwhelming and we want to give up.
Exactly. So my next question would be, how do you all think we can restore hope in our communities, you know, after a long history of violence and gun violence? Like, how can we restore, you know, that hope of, you know, a new beginning or a revolution or, you know, something new? Like, how can we get people to get back to that place? Because we hear about it, but we don't see a lot of people, like, you know, really excited, like, you know, because of the actual environment, everything that's happening around them, it doesn't look like there is a way out. So how do we, you know, kind of try to restore that hope?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I wish I had all the answers, but I think one of the things that in the approach that we feel important is, I think, starting with the community. So, and bringing that hope within the community of what works for them, where is their opportunity, where is their people, you know. I can come into a neighborhood and say these are the issues or what, it doesn't mean as much if I come in and it's not driven by it's not driven by someone who's there and is working with other community members. And so I think the community-based approach is really important. And that's, you know, one of the things that we think about with gun violence prevention from the public health perspective is driven solutions and not necessarily, law enforcement driven, but really how do you work with it within the community, so that using it, elevating the community voice and starting there is really important.
Yeah, definitely. And you spoke earlier about Cure Violence, and I showed the youth leaders last week a little video about it, I believe. But a lot of people don't even know, you know, that is a thing. So could you kind of talk about that? Because, you know, the name says a lot, Cure Violence, but, you know, kind of what is taking place, like, in the communities where, or is it the, what do you call them? The what are the names?
Interrupters.
Where the interrupters are, like, what is happening?
So just to give you a little bit kind of the geeky data nerd stuff, Cure Violence is a model that's been implemented nationally. I think it started maybe in Baltimore or Boston, somewhere back east, and really looks at a public health approach, and that's really kind of how they have framed and thought about the violence model and as a kind of a contagion. And how do you address the contagion within neighborhoods that are seeing high rates of violence? And so kind of nationally, it's been implemented in a number of different cities to varying levels of success. But there's been some decent evidence that's been an effective way to begin to address violence in some neighborhoods. And really what it does is it focuses on neighborhoods that have high rates of violence, and it's not huge kind of geographic spans. Usually it's typically like a 10 by 10 block neighborhood. And here in St. Louis, there are three neighborhoods that have been selected. So where they're starting is Wells Goodfellow, Hamilton Heights, and that's one that actually kind of started the work already, and then Walnut Park, and then Dutchtown is the other one. And so what the model is really, the key parts of it are violence interrupters. And so these are people who are from the neighborhood or have close ties to the neighborhood.
Yeah.
And are really building relationships with those in that community. And,
that's cool.
And trying to be those people who are maybe kind of ears on the street to, you know, are there issues bubbling up, or are there longstanding issues, conflicts, and trying to insert themselves or have discussions to try to de-escalate and mediate some of those conflicts before they maybe rise the level of gun violence, or try to talk to people before it get, you know, retaliation or things like that. And sometimes it's connecting people that are involved in kind of these conflicts to connecting them to other services, or, you know, trying to really interrupt the potential cycle of violence before it starts. And so they have a couple of different types of workers. They have the violence interrupters who are really doing that kind of conflict mediation and things like that. And then they also have outreach workers who are working in the community, you know, getting people to know about the Cure Violence, also trying to connect people to other services. And so, you know, can be a resource for those in the community who might need to be, or who would want connection to other services, employment or health services, things like that. And so trying to be those connectors. And the other piece is really trying to be engaged with the community too. A part of all the neighborhoods will have like a community advisory board. And so we'll have community members and a community voice with providing input into the program, and probably also, I would assume, to kind of, you know, providing insight of what's happening, what are they saying in the neighborhood, things like that. So that's kind of the basic premise of it. But the model's been, like I said, implemented not only in the United States, but I think all over the world as well.
Yeah, that's super cool.
Hey, everybody, thanks for stopping through. It's time right now for our Pick the City Up art interlude featuring a special piece titled We Cope.
They soar like eagles. They sing like crows. And they hawk through our streets. As daylight sings, darkness sings his bitter song. Children playing in the streets, their older siblings out hotter than heat. Mama trying to tell them to cool down, but they won't listen until they hear mama scream. The sniffles from her nose, riots out of control. R.I.P. MB on clothes, police can hardly gain control on TV like a show. But they only show when fools are being made and not the making of greatness. You see, his death is not in vain. New voices have rearranged a chain of events, and for once we're slowly starting to see change. Badges next to cameras, cameras next to temple. Now you don't have to be a scholar to think twice before squeezing your chopper, or at least we'd hope to cope with the pain of still some still tope. You see, his death was not in vain, but some still cope. So they shoot at the sky because hell is too hot and fire is without reason. So those bullets still soar. They sing like crows, and they hawk through our streets. Night is today as bitter as to sweet. As we sleep, pistols breach the integrity of our communities. Broken unity calls for broken relationships, which brings broken people. More trauma as time passes, more than one would ask, more than one wants to see, and more than we were taught to speak. So lonely nights he thinks about MB, how he wants to change this contradicting system, not just the laws, but the people that come with them. But then he remembered that he's a felon with every right but the one to use his voice. So back to hiding behind his tote, he goes with words choked out of his throat. Now his heart's too cold to provide tears for his eyes to cope. Back to prison, or at least they'd hope. So they still soar. They sing like crows, and they hawk through our streets. As daylight peaks, darkness still sings songs that are bitterly sweet. Those who can see and have the courage to speak have helped us continue our journey where we hope to find peace. Mike Brown's death didn't just show us that there is a gun problem in the police force, but in our communities, where little kids are forced to grow up faster than they should. Let these senseless acts of violence encourage you to be the change that you want to see. Do it for the ones that cannot, the ones that want better, even the ones that don't know better, because I would do it for all four of my friends who were shot and killed in 2018. And three of the four will never get to see 21. And here I am, 22, wishing they could see it. Wishing we didn't have to grow up so fast. Wishing we could have grew up outside of the system. But they still soar. They sing like crows, and they hawk through our streets. When night turns to day, I hope that every blind eye can see how high death sings and why mama screams. Thank you.
Do you all think more community events will help bring down the amount of gun violence that we see, and why? Anybody could take that.
I definitely believe it. For one of the reasons, because basically when more people are around, less shenanigans, it's like less bound to happen, because there's more eyes watching, and there's more people, there's more witnesses, basically. And another reason is because violence usually happens out of boredom. I mean, not just boredom, but also necessity for resources. Mm-hmm. But some of the main reasons is because most kids and young adults don't have anything to do or anywhere to go. And so they try to make their own ways to get by throughout their daily lives, and that's usually through violence. So if there's like more community events, they won't think, hey, I should probably go do this or that. Instead, they would think, I could actually go to this community basketball competition or something.
That's good.
It would help to kind of get to know those in your neighborhood and your community better. And if you know people, you might have not, might decrease violence too, if you have a better kind of connectedness to the community.
Yeah, that's something I was talking about too last week when we brought that up, you know, is that I hear a lot of stories from, you know, older people, like in their probably like 60s and 70s and up, you know, and how, like, especially when the Ville was a very thriving community for Black people, how, you know, people, everybody knew each other on that block. Like, you know, people were watching their neighbors' kids for them. Like, you know, people were giving
eyes on you.
So, and I feel like we've kind of lost that as communities, you know, not just as Black people or brown people, you know, just, but everybody, especially because now you have a block of people and nobody knows anybody's name. Like, you know, nobody, like, even me personally, I barely know my neighbor's name, like, you know. And I don't think that's a good thing, you know, because like you said, if you know somebody, you know, and you're cool with somebody, or if you know Mrs. Smith's son, you know, and she's a really nice lady, I don't want to kill her son. Like, you know, it's that type of thing. Or because they're going to know who did it. Like, you know, it brings more of like a consciousness and a awareness of like life and, you know, the people that you're actually connected to and who you would be hurting and how far that hurt would go. So, yeah, I think that is a very, very, you know, important topic and could go way deeper than what we're talking about right now. But Miss Jessie, so you've been studying it for a while now, you know, public health. How much have you seen that the lack of resources connects to the amount of gun violence in a community?
Yeah, so I think if you look at, for example, on a map of St. Louis, you can, and you looked at all the different factors, if you looked at poverty, or if you looked at education level, or health, any kind of health factors from, you know, heart disease and things like that, and then you overlay that with a map of where gun violence is happening, you'll see that the highest rates, the disparities are all a lot in the same area. So that, you know, it's root causes of violence, and it maps out that way. And so it's and then if you put COVID on top of it too, where the highest rates of infection of COVID too are all kind of in the same, you'll see the same area. So
And you were talking too a little bit earlier about, you know, how it affects the whole state, even the whole country. It affects everywhere, but like kind of, because I believe I remember you all were focusing on, you know, how it affects more rural areas too. And I don't think people, you know, kind of see or even like are aware
that it doesn't just affect the city, like, you know, and we aren't looking at the numbers in these more rural areas as well. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, there's a couple of things. One, the way we approach gun violence is not just that it's homicide, interpersonal violence. We also think about it as a wider range. So we think about it also with gun suicide, so kind of violence against oneself, as well as accidental. So kind of anything that's related to kind of gun injury and death is what we talk about as gun violence. And what we found with our work too is, for one, people don't, the public does not see it that way. They only think of city homicide, interpersonal violence as gun violence. And so we're trying to kind of make people understand that this is, you know, a wider issue. Yeah. And for rural areas, actually, if you look at the data across the whole state, if you looked at every gun death, two-thirds is actually suicide.
Wow.
So that's, you know, it's not just a homicide issue. And so in rural areas, gun-related suicide can be at high rates.
Yeah.
As well as, I think, some of the cities outside of St. Louis that are maybe not completely rural, but smaller, like Columbia and Springfield and some places in the Southeast have been seeing some increases in gun interpersonal violence as well. And so, you know, one of the things we've been trying to do is, one, make people understand kind of the spectrum of the types of gun violence that we need to be thinking about as a state, as well as, you know, how can we work with communities to work on the prevention side and you know, as some of these other communities are seeing increases in interpersonal violence and homicides too, like, how can we be on the forefront of that and be working in those communities to address it?
One of the questions we had, it says, why are city leaders so apprehensive about different resources that could help our communities?
And I think we've come a little bit, you know, there's been some progress in the city with even just putting money towards cure violence. So looking at a violence prevention model that is more of a public health approach and more of a community-based approach than putting it, you know, just into law enforcement solutions. And so there's been a lot, and that work to get that money into the city's budget was because of the community. There was lots of community organizers and community groups, and people showed up to the Board of Alders meetings and talked about the importance. And so, you know, that's why there's that money is, you know, because of the advocacy that a lot of people from the communities did over the past several years. But I think too, you know, I think the general answer is that there's, you know, competing budget priorities, and leaders don't always have the same budget priorities as what the community does and where we, you know, feel that money should be going to resources. Yeah. And so, you know, we try to work with nonprofits and community organizations, but also, you know, while we don't, as a foundation, we can't do anything that with policy and telling, you know, what policy should be passed or shouldn't be passed by city leadership, but we can work with the community organizations to educate and put our resources behind those, you know, having those services available and working with the community.
Yeah. What do you all think that politicians on the state level could do to help combat the gun violence epidemic that we're facing?
All right, so I think that like, they should come more into the different communities and, like, walk that way and go down the path to see how it feels and see how they will feel to be in that predicament, that situation.
Yeah, that's pretty good. What you were going to say?
For me, I feel like they should be more involved. Like, they should come in the communities, like earlier with the events and everything, they should be in the event and like just talk about what we can do and like actually be there so we could see them and like see them actually do what they preach, you know?
Yeah, I agree. Anybody else got anything?
So like, for example, you know how a lot of city leaders, they complain about the gun violence and how we don't upkeep our neighborhoods and stuff. Well, I mean, a lot of people that live in these neighborhoods and, you know, they're young and their parents before them didn't give them the experience as to how to upkeep, like, you know, an apartment or a house or a neighborhood in general. So I feel like they should come out and, you know, actually like show us the way, like teach us what's the difference between recycling and non-recycling. Why is it important? Why it's important not to litter in your neighborhood and to leave like chip bags everywhere. How to safely use a gun, even though I know that we don't promote gun violence here, but stuff like that.
Or even, you know, I believe we're actually supposed to have people like come out and you know, clean our neighborhoods for us, you know, to like help us to upkeep it, but we don't see that in a lot of neighborhoods, and we should probably be asking why, you know, why we don't see that, if that is a part of, you know, something that we pay for. But I definitely agree too with the you know, having them out more in the community, you know, because I think that's the thing I've been talking to my friends about as well, is, you know, when you go to that voting ballot and it's time to vote for someone, like, it's like, yeah, you see them, you see all the ads, but it's like, I don't know them, you know? So it's really hard to make that decision in that, at that time, you know? So I feel like even us as voters in the communities, we don't even know, you know, who exactly to put our trust in, because like you all are saying, you don't know, you know, these people haven't really engaged and been involved with the community a lot of times. And I won't say this is for all of them, but for some of them, it is true. You know, we don't see them. Like, I don't know who my alderman is on a personal level, you know, and different things like that. So I do believe, you know, we should see more of them, especially if they are, you know, taking a responsibility to represent us in the communities they serve, you know. We should, you know, have more of a, you know, it doesn't have to be super personal, but, you know, at least know a little something more about you than, you know, you have a wife and kids and you worked in office for this amount of years, you know?
And how do you, so I hear you kind of wanting the, you know, local officials to be out in the community more, but also kind of, I guess, to that, how do you get more youth engaged? There's a presidential election this year, and getting them to register to vote and vote, not just the presidential elections, but for their local leaders. And how do you get more youth into that civic engagement?
I think one, what they were saying, you know, getting that individual or those individuals more onto the communities, and two, just reassuring young people that their voices matter, that their vote really does matter, because I think we have a lot of reasons to believe otherwise, you know, a lot of reasons to believe otherwise, that our vote doesn't matter or it doesn't count, you know, or that democracy isn't a real thing, you know. So just kind of reinstilling that confidence in the vote, you know, and also educating the youth, you know, on how to vote, how to register to vote, you know, because even for me, I still was like, the first time I voted, it still was just kind of like a, what? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I didn't know how to register. I didn't know where I was registered. Like, you know, so just educating and just reassuring the confidence and building those relationships with, you know, the young folks, I think would be, you know, some steps to take to get them out and, you know, in those lines, you know, and practicing their rights. Yeah. That was a great question. Anybody else have anything else before we get to these last few questions? Ms. Jessie, did you have any other questions for us?
I think you kind of got to this, but if you saw a local leader tomorrow, the governor, the president, the mayor, what's the one thing you would want them to know about youth and gun violence in St. Louis?
I'll let some of y'all take that first.
I would definitely want them to know that the word youth isn't synonymous with knowledge. So I feel like they really underestimate a lot of the things that we know about them. Mm-hmm. And that they underestimate us. So I just wish that a lot of those biases were broken down and not so used and rehearsed when it comes to approaching us with things.
That's good. Anybody else? Any other guys? Going once, going twice? Okay, I'll go. Well, for me, I don't know. I think I would just want to help them understand, like, that, and this might sound cliche, but that the struggle is real. Like, you know? Because I think some people really aren't aware, you know? They probably hear about it, but it's just really hard for them to connect. So just kind of, you know, walking them through that pain or through that day-to-day thing, you know, sharing some of those stories with them, you know. Like, I used to go on an outreach with, I used to be an intern at the Dream Center. We'd go on an outreach called Kids Jam. We're going to, you know, these neighborhoods and these communities where, you know, some of these kids were being raised by their grandparents or their brothers and sisters because, you know, X, Y, and Z has happened. Or, you know, we'll go there on a Saturday and the night before they just had, you know, somebody get shot, you know, and the kids were right there. So, you know, we go out into these communities, and I'll never forget the story of this lady. You know, she came out and just was like, you know, thank you for being here, like, for giving our kids, you know, something to do. And she was just saying how, you know, some of these kids have to grow up way faster than they want to. But then she started to tell us a story about a little girl who she found on a step. She was like 5 years old, getting herself dressed to go to school, like, on the steps. Like, you know what I'm saying? So it's just like really just walking them through the struggle. Like, letting them know, like, what you hear is probably not even scratching the surface of, like, what's going on. And, you know, the disadvantages that people have is not like we're pulling a guilt card or nothing. It's just like, it is what it is, you know, and just kind of just getting that through to them that, you know, like, change is needed very, very desperately. So, yeah, that's what I would do. Casey, C-Zach, or Tony? Oh, I said his name. Sorry. Do y'all have anything? Okay. Cool.
Nah, nothing I could think of.
Like, honestly, what you said was basically it.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, I feel that. The struggle is real. I never even thought about that term like that too. You just asked that question, Ms. Jessie. So
you put new meaning on.
Yeah, right. dope. Hey. So yeah. Well, with that being said, I don't have any more questions on here. And if nobody else has anything, Chris, you have any questions? Because I know sometimes he be dropping some good stuff.
Nah, not that I can think of. No.
Okay, cool. Well, cool. Well, Miss LaRose, I just want to say thank you so much for joining us today. you for being a part of the conversation. Right? Yeah, it was great.
Thank you so much for having me. I love anytime I get an opportunity to work with Story Stitchers and work with you and also see you perform. I love that and enjoy that. And unfortunately, I haven't been able to go in person to see you all perform in a while. So I look forward to seeing
that.
We're in this. We want to work together with our, as much as possible. Because together, I think we're all stronger to address gun violence. And so,
definitely. Thank you so much again. We appreciate all you're doing for the community.
Thank you for listening. And last but not least, we want to give a very special shout out to the StitchCast Studio sponsors, the City of St. Louis Youth at Risk Crime Prevention Grant of 2020, Stewart Family Foundation, and Missouri Foundation for Health. To learn more, visit storystitchers.org.
They say who that, but you already knew that. That beat them Story Stitchers, Story Stitchers, Story Stitchers, Story Stitchers, Story Stitchers.